I've had the privilege of speaking to a lot of World War II veterans. And what has always surprised me is that no matter how they served, no matter where they served, no matter what they did and went through, their response to any form of admiration is, well, there was a job to do, and we had to do it. Is that the kind of guy your dad was?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My brother and I, we grew up knowing that he was a Doolittle Raider. We knew this took place. We honestly, as kids, didn't know much about it, mm-hmm. and he would do no bragging about it. Mm-hmm. What he did tell us about his war years were more sort of fun adventures with his buddies. Going to the Kasbah, Northern Africa, riding camels, playing poker on board the aircraft carrier and getting cleaned out by the Navy boys. It sounded like a lark when you hear these various stories. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't until we were adults, and I think I can speak for a whole generation, until we learned what our parents did, maybe read up a history on it or whatnot, that we got the clear picture. Mm-hmm. They came home, they had work to do, and it was not proper to go about bragging about what you did. Mm-hmm. And it was over with and done with, proud of their duty, but time to start a new life.
So he felt comfortable talking about it.
About 20 years ago, the Cincinnati Historical Museum approached him to be a docent in the World War II exhibit, and he liked that. He enjoyed that. And a couple of historical articles were written about him in the Cincinnati History Quarterly. And when those things came out, the next thing he knew, his phone was ringing off the wall. He was being invited to grade schools to speak, to Kiwanis and other civic groups, and to various World War II veterans groups in the tri-state area. And then as years went by, he went further afield to Minnesota and to New York and Washington and all over. And he was quite good at that. But I think 20 years ago, he would never have expected this sort of adoration. I guess that's the best word for it.
And that surprises me, and it doesn't surprise me, because I've had other gentlemen tell me that they want to tell the story before the time comes when they're not around to tell it. And looks like your father almost had a mission sense of that.
Once he realized, I think a couple of things. Number one, he was getting older, and yes, the stories from World War II needed to be told. And coupled with the fact that, and I'm going to brag a little bit, he was quite good at this. Mm-hmm. He was a good public speaker. He realized this is something worthwhile. Now I'll go out as often as they want me to go out, for as long as I can, because he realized it was a public service, and he was great. He never dropped a date or a name. He kept the chronology at all times, the historical background, everything, without notes, and a wonderful sense of humor all over the thing.
Well, I did read something about how he attended the premiere of Pearl Harbor with you and your brother and was all at once gracious with that sense of humor.
Oh, my. I hope Bruckheimer broke even on that thing. You talk about a fracturing of history. Mm. Oh, man. Those guys, those raiders especially, who had invited to the premiere, they just held their nose.
So if you couldn't say anything nice, they didn't much say anything at all.
That's right. Gentlemen to the end.
And that kind of leads me to ask, I mean, when you take away the gloss of being a participant, an active participant in history, and, you know, when he's home from the office, I mean, tell us about him. What kind of guy was he?
Well, this was back in the 50s and 60s, and I'm not kidding you. He didn't even loosen his tie when he came home. He sat down, and he read the newspaper, and he read Time magazine, and he was very happy. Our dinner times, and I thought everybody lived through this, our dinner times were sort of a free-for-all geography and history lesson. Hmm. And I honestly thought everybody did that because we learned all the geography, all the history, all sorts of stuff from Dad at the dinner table. It was a perfect forum for that. Mm-hmm. And Oh, we did a little traveling while we were younger. He owned his own business, which really sort of prevented long traveling. It wasn't until my brother and I got out of the house and he was approaching retirement that he and Mom could do some real traveling. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah, he was very happy at home, keeping up on the news of the day.
And seemed to raise two good sons.
Thank you. I think the jury's still out on that. On behalf of my brother, I'll say, yeah, okay.
To tell us about this ceremony mm-hmm. that they will have next month.
Well, the Doolittle Raider Association has an executive director. His name's Tom Casey. He lives in Florida. And one of his duties, the sad one, is that he has to organize funeral arrangements for the boys as they go. And he's been with the Doolittle Association long enough to have this down pat. Mm-hmm. And he always arranges for a B-25 bomber flyover, and he will have at least one, maybe two quartets singing. And there will be a variety of speakers. The local VFW will have a flag presentation and this sort of thing. That's all outdoors. The weather's supposed to be beautiful. Out at a park near our home where he used to walk his mile every day until very recently. And then we will all repair to a beautiful new lodge far into the park. We'll get together and just shoot the breeze and swap tales about Dad and everything else. The co-pilot for Jimmy Doolittle is still with us. His name is Dick Cole, and he lives down in Texas, and he'll be coming in too. Mm-hmm. We will start the ceremony as soon as Dick flies in and is escorted around from the airport. Dick will be 98, and he is an absolute perfect specimen of an elderly gentleman. His hearing isn't so good, but everything else is just as sharp and fit as you could ever imagine. But he and Dad became very close friends, so he'll be back up to Cincinnati to mm-hmm. attend this.
Well, tell us about the cups, the goblets.
Oh, golly. When did that start? Many, many years ago. I'm going to say back in the 50s or early 60s. Goblets were made and engraved with each raider's name and their plane number. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful carry case was built for them. And a bottle of cognac in Jimmy Doolittle's birth year of 1898 was laid down and brought into that. It's never been opened. Mm-hmm. But every year at the reunion in April, the attending raiders drink a toast to those who have passed that year. And the final two raiders will finally open up that bottle. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's getting close. There are four fellas left.
Mm. I'm curious. Did he ever tell you why he volunteered to go on this raid?
Well, you kind of hit it when we started this interview, Todd. He enrolled right after college. He knew that America was going to get involved in the war sooner or later. It was his duty. And when the call went out and it had to do with Jimmy Doolittle, that sealed the deal to work with and possibly fly with Jimmy Doolittle.
And it certainly didn't hurt that this was going to be the response to Pearl Harbor.
Absolutely. Roosevelt came to Chief of Staff of the Army and the Navy and said, you've got to do something. We need to retaliate now.
And I noticed that while they didn't do very much physical damage, they did a lot of, well, they put the Japanese on notice. The Americans are coming.
Right. The Japanese people had always believed their military high command, that they were impregnable. Nothing could reach them. Mm. So, yes, they were really rocked back on their heels by this thing. Mm. But from that point forward, little by little, you can trace, especially from midway on, that was the turning point. And it gave a tremendous boost to Americans. Right now I'm going through quite a stack of newspapers from Chicago, his hometown.
Right.
And the headlines are just marvelous. Just, you know, look what we did. Look what we did, finally. So.
Did he ever indicate that he was, even though he said, that, I'm sure he felt that we had a job to do and we did it, could you ever tell that that really was something he was extraordinarily proud of?
Yeah, he was. He kept all his memorabilia, all the letters, and all the official papers, everything. Mm. He did not parade that stuff around. I've only recently started coming across it and looking at it, detailing it, cataloging it, if you will, and just realizing what a treasure trove we have. He was proud of it, but that pride was always quiet.
John, thanks for coming by and telling us these wonderful stories about your dad.
You know, it's my pleasure.